Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine podcast. It's episode 83. I'm Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, your host, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Hello, Jason.
We're back.
We are back.
I say that every week, but you know, every week I'm just a little bit amazed.
It's a little startling.
The consistency. Just patting ourselves on the back. Ouch. Just, I think I hurt myself. Patting myself on the back.
It's worth it. I pulled a muscle or two doing that, but it's worth it. This is not easy.
Yeah. This is a big week.
Good week, yes.
Upfronts is, for people who don't know, this is the dog and pony show where networks are communicating with the press because the press covers the upfronts, but really it's the dog and pony show for advertisers where they're trying to sell advertisers on how awesome their shows are going to be so that they should advertise a lot on the networks, basically, right? That's the primary purpose of the upfronts is to get advertisers excited about what CBS is doing in the fall or whatever.
Yes, and specifically getting them to pay money up front. Then that's the way that they do it. And you're penalized, like they're saying, look at all these hot trailers. Look at us. We're in New York, and we're putting on this big glitzy show with all of our stars. And you're going to be super excited, and your fingers are going to reach in your pocket and give us all this money. Because if you buy now based on the little trailers, when the show actually becomes a hit, you're getting a deal. If you wait and something, let's say Kevin can wait on CBS. I know you're excited.
I can't believe that was the first show you mentioned.
Oh my God. Kevin James.
Did you know that he's got a young hot wife on that show?
Is that on CBS? Oh, it is, right. Yes, it is. So it's a shocker.
Yeah.
If that show blows up and becomes a huge hit.
Big Bang Theory.
Right. And you want to advertise on it then, but you didn't give your monies at the upfront, you're going to pay like a 20% penalty.
Yeah.
Hence the title.
Plus, but they are also, if something doesn't do as well as they promise, then they also have the make goods, right? Where they give them free ads basically in order to apologize for how badly the shows did.
Yes. I would love a story about chronicling the history of these make goods, because technically you're getting your money back in some way. Mm. I bet you no one ever has got their money actually back.
No.
That they've said, you know what? You're right. So we have to make good on X amount of minutes. We're going to put them in one of our hits over here and one of our medium shows over there. And you get ad space on other shows.
It's like returning for store credit. You know, you don't get to walk away. You have to, if you have a bad meal at a restaurant, they'll give you a coupon to come back to that restaurant and hopefully have another bad meal. I don't know.
Yeah. And so my first call, I did two columns this week, two critics' notebooks. Yeah.
I was impressed. That's... Only one of them had the word sadness in the headline. So
right.
The good for you.
It was really sad, too. And it was mean and sad. And that, I think, is my favorite one. But yeah, basically what I did in that first one was to say, hey, you know what? Isn't this a little corny that we're having this amazing thing that everybody involved in knows it's a ruse? Like, the ad buyers know that for the last 5+ years, ratings have been trending down across broadcast. And now you would technically be paying the same amount of money for something that delivers half the audience. And how does that make any kind of math sense? And are they really paying that much more money? Are they paying the same money? Or are they paying less? I looked at it on the first one by saying, okay, look, broadcast television's broken. It hasn't had a hit in forever. And when it does have a hit, it's such an outlier, whether it's, you know, Empire or something on CBS. CBS is doing great, by the way. They are, again, the number one network, both in total viewers and in the demo. NBC is doing pretty well, too. But the overall total audience for most of these things outside of CBS is pretty bad. And much of the ratings are matched depending on which shows you call up. I mean, you want the biggest shows on network, you can also go to, say, The Walking Dead and those things. But when a show is pulling in a 1.0 in the demo, you can find a similar show on cable doing that. So I was just basically saying, okay, we're having a party for ourselves, but our whole industry is completely broken and doesn't work and hasn't had a hit in forever. And the percentages of failure are rising as the ratings are going lower. and nobody's fixing it. So that was my first one, saying like, why are we having a party again? And then the second was basically saying, okay, look, yeah, that was a dark take on the upfronts process. But here's why you have to do that. You have to cover this thing critically. And I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but there's very few people out there who are actually covering broadcast networks in a critical way, covering the industry. Some people are just review shows and they don't do anything like that. Sometimes the reporting that goes on is basically about shows that are getting created, shows that are getting canceled, stars that are being hired, what the showrunner says. It's not super critical of the actual industry. And there's just not that many of us left who do it. And I like to do it, mostly because I like to write about failure. Failure analysis, one of my favorite things. And but I was trying to make the point that, yeah, the first column was pretty harsh and the second one was decently harsh as well. But look, there's some – A, I think it has to be covered because it's still – the best ongoing story in television, because it is failing and it is struggling and it is going through this monumental change. But also I think that they did some interesting things, Jason, at the upfronts that kind of are maybe the first sign that they realize, how can we hold on to whatever viewers are going to watch broadcast network television? How do we hold them on? And the way they did that is with familiarity. That's why everything that you see coming out this
That's why Fox brought back its 2005 lineup.
Yeah, basically, right? I mean, there's familiarity, whether it's in, you know, more Dick Wolf and Chicago stuff or spinoffs of current series like Blacklist, or, you know, bringing stuff back like 24 Legacy and Lethal Weapon and Prison Break.
And MacGyver.
And franchises, and MacGyver. And then franchises that you know from the movies like Lethal Weapon.
Right.
And The Exorcist.
I saw our buddy on Twitter, the Masked Scheduler. He made a statement that I thought was really really clever. That was, this is the networks acting like networks and not like showing as much cable envy, like being a little bit more of who they are. What do you think about that?
Well, yeah, I think that's right. I mean, this is what they need to do. I think when they've tried to do cable series in the drama field, they failed. The closest that they've ever got, I think, of doing something that was like, wow, this kind of sort of feels like a decent cable show, is ABC.
And like American Crime.
American Crime, right. Yeah. And so, but that didn't do well in the ratings. No. People don't want to see that, right? So yeah. I think they finally realized that, you know, the way to do stuff is to, you know, you have to just be entertaining, make it safe. I hate to say that, but make it safe, make it familiar. And the second column I did this week also addresses this part about familiarity, and that we are definitely, and you and I have talked about this many times, we're at the point where it's saturation to the point where it's people wanting freedom from choice, not freedom of choice, freedom from choice, because they're just paralysis setting in. And so, yeah, if you look and you say, oh, I mean, I'm just going to say this is not me, but somebody might say, oh, yeah, Kevin James, I like him. He's got another show. Sure, I'll watch that. Because he's a known quantity, right? Or Ted Danson's in a place. And you're like, oh, that's a... Yeah, sure. Christian Bale and Ted Danson. I know and like those guys. I'll watch that. Will it be the best show in the whole world? Probably not. But, like...
Although that's Mike Schur, so Parks and Rec and Brooklyn Nine-Nine. It could be good, but...
It could be good, but I'm thinking that as far as, like, when you look at something on television, you say... Lethal Weapon. Well, I already know what that is, and I liked it, so let's try that. Which gives the networks, I think, a little bit of a foot up on, or leg up on other networks like ABC that are just bringing out brand new stuff and throwing it against the wall. And, mid-level or obscure niche cable channel coming up with a drama that no one's ever heard of. When you're overwhelmed, what are you going to take a choice on? I think when you're someone like you and I, and maybe the people who listen to this podcast, you take a chance on that thing that's new. But I think a lot of people in this country are going to say, oh yeah, Lethal Weapon, I'm all over that.
Sure. And they might be disappointed, but I think the goal is you want a lot of people to sample it. And maybe if the product is good, they'll stick with it. But you also need to get people to pay attention and know you exist. And saying Lethal Weapon and advertising Lethal Weapon on your Sunday football games, right, which they will undoubtedly do, that's you know, that's all that you can do, and then the show will either click with them or it won't. But you know, you gotta get people's attention. And saying Lethal Weapon, saying 24 is, you know, a new generation of 24.
Yep.
That's powerful. Or even like I watched the Designated Survivor trailer, which is right. ABC. It's a great trailer. Again, uh-huh. Who can judge? You can't even judge by a pilot, let alone a trailer right. for a pilot, whether a show's going to be good or not. But you know, what's that? That's something new. Well, yeah, it's something new, but it's also 24 meets the West Wing starring Kiefer Sutherland, right? It's like, yeah. I get what this show is about. It's got an exciting trailer, and like, that's good. That's like, it's like the TV. I mean, it's the TV equivalent of blockbuster movies, that you need yeah. blockbusters if you're the network. You need to be big. You need to be recognizable. And so that's what they're doing.
And I think that's what our good friend, the Mask Scheduler,
Scheduler
was doing. And, you know, he's had a series of these things talking about the industry. He's great because, you know, Preston and I have known each other for a really long time, and we bicker back and forth because mm-hmm. I am sort of the designated crank.
I just get the popcorn out when you guys are going yeah. back and forth on Twitter. It's great.
But, you know, it's he's a broadcast guy. He's got his whole career basically is in broadcast, and he did great work in it. So he's not going to like roll over and say, oh, yeah, no, we don't suck. Here's what we're doing. And, you know, here's the world we live in, and here's how you have to do it to make. But it's, the weird thing is we agree on so much stuff. And I think there's probably some stuff in the second column that I did that he would definitely agree on, including this. We definitely agree on this idea where I think he's just saying them being networks is going back to being networks and stop playing the cable game is this whole thing about familiarity. And there's no crime in that. Look, as I said in my piece, I don't look to the networks for my creative rush. I maybe during their comedies, which are great, but I don't look to their dramas for that. I looked to their dramas for entertainment. And you're right, I looked at Designated Survivor and I thought I would watch that.
Yeah. Like
you know, I'm not going to say one way or the other whether it's going to be any good because it's, you know, it's just a trailer. But I would, based on the little thing that piqued my interest, and I looked at the 10 o'clock slot and there's nothing in that 10 o'clock slot that I would actually watch other than that. So sure, that's got my, I'll check that out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always looking for, you know, another kind of blacklist that I can just get into when I want to.
Yeah, yeah. Makes sense. And it's a simple enough premise that you totally get it. The premise of Designated Survivor is that, you know, he's the whatever, Secretary of Transportation or whatever, who's not allowed to be at the State of the Union in case something happens. And something happens, and he's the president. Suddenly, Kiefer Sutherland, looking as schlubby as Kiefer Sutherland possibly could in his hoodie, is right. sworn in as the President of the United States and is in the middle of this attack on the U.S. government. And I was like, all right, so it's West Wing and 24 with Kiefer Sutherland. I get it. Like, I totally get what that show could be. And that's enough to watch it. And then we'll see what it is. But that's, you know, I expect that from network TV. That's really what I expect, is stuff like that. Some spectacle, you know, it's the equivalent of a summer blockbuster movie. And that's good. That's like part of it. That can't be your only diet, right? But like you said, we'd be fools to look to the networks and expect some obscure, arty thing, because it's not the game they should be playing, and it's not the game they play. So,
right. And I think that, you know, that envy was driven partly by everybody outside of network winning Emmys.
Yeah.
You know,
is this a reason why you have your two lists at the end of the year? Because they're playing different games? Your best broadcast and your best cable?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. I mean, that's...
To make them feel better by giving them their own list. No, but they're playing different games. Why put them together?
Yeah, I think it's ridiculous to put them together. I mean, the only thing that can actually play, for me, the only one I had on my list of 46 shows was Jane the Virgin. And that's the part I haven't got to yet to in this discussion of what television should be. In the first one, I talked about, like, you take these big swings, right? Everybody's schedule is pretty safe. ABC's schedule has some safe elements in it. It has some stuff I don't think is going to work at all. But it has, you know, it has like a traditional, we're going to do this crazy concept thing on the networks. And I don't think it's going to work, but that's them taking a big shot, because when they do take a big shot and it works, like Empire, then you're talking big time viewership. That's your outlier series. But, you know, both of them were a little bit, I think the numbers definitely trailed down. But the two breakout hits kind of from outside of anything on CBS, which is, again, I think amongst the networks, that's playing in its own field, even apart. I call them a network apart. But the two shows that did really well were high concept series, Quantico and Doodle Booty, right?
Oh, yeah. So that's Blind Spot, but I prefer Doodle Booty.
So. Yeah, that's, you know, regular listeners will know that it's it's Doodle Booty.
Yep.
But yeah, Blind Spot and Quantico were the breakouts. And so I don't necessarily think those shows ended up being something I wanted to watch. They became frustrating to me. And I may revisit it because both of them had big twists at the end of their fall seasons. And going into season two, you might have a whole different set of viewers or lack of. But yeah, those were big, high concept shows. And I think ABC is still trying to make those. But everybody else is saying, you know what? Percentage-wise, this is kind of a baseball analytics thing. They're just saying, percentage-wise, that big swing for the fences doesn't work. We're going to hit for singles and we'll push the runner in and we'll stay survive. We'll survive and stay relevant by just being consistent. So I think that's what they're doing this year, and I think that's smart.
All right. Anything more you want to talk about what went on there? You want to did any? I you and I were both talking about before we started. Lacey Rose wrote this nice article on the Hollywood Reporter about the 10 newcomers generating the most heat, and you know, she links to trailers of a bunch of these things, and trailers are, you know. They're trailers, right?
They're
trailers for. I laughed at the MacGyver one, which is not in her list, because like we've already heard that they don't like the pilot, and although it's going to series, they're going to change the pilot. But here's a trailer based on a pilot. Like, well, yeah, why? Why am I even crazy. Looking?
But
at
even
this?
Though, yeah, I mean, you and I said, I mean, it does. If you get the MacGyver idea, if you get that done well in a pilot, you and I said last week, it'll work.
Yeah.
For CBS. Absolutely. It'll work.
I totally see why, you know, you would do that instead of like Limitless, which didn't get picked up, but it's the same kind of idea of it's high concept. People know it. You could do a procedural. It's got a little twist. Smart guy solves mysteries, trying to find the next Elementary. Get it. I get it.
Sure. And it, to me, that works. But yeah, I fundamentally have a problem of so I didn't participate in any of the We Rate the Trailer stuff because I think that's I guess if you put a big gigantic asterisk and saying, you know, this is a first look and it's not like a critical take on whatever. I mean, there's ways that you could really, I guess, rationalize doing that, and everybody does it. And that's also a rationalization for the need to do it because people are going to be clicking on those kind of stories. But I didn't feel the need to participate in that because, you know, if you can't, for me, and I've said many times, if you can't judge whether a show is going to be good based on the hour-long pilot you watched, you're sure as hell not going to know in a cut-down trailer.
Yeah.
And it bugs me to no end that these little sizzle reels start creating all this like fake hype for something that's coming out. That honestly, based on last year, it's all going to die. I mean, you look back at last year and you think, why would you even have an upfront based on how shitty things did last year?
I'm going to check the box now.
Yeah.
Checked. well, I remember us talking about Supergirl and there was some buzz about Supergirl and some negative buzz about it because it was essentially doing what a lot of these shows do, which is recap the pilot episode in 3 minutes, which is, and so with Supergirl, they're like, oh, the whole show is going to be about, you know, about what they showed in the trailer. It's like, no, that's the pilot. That's what the pilot's about. And it wasn't representative, and people got worked up about it. And, you know, I think good shows can have good trailers and bad shows can have good trailers. And the opposite is also true. Yeah, pilots aren't representative already. And then
you cut a
trailer of a pilot, and what does that tell us? I watched the pilot trailer for Pitch, which is the Fox show that actually just got moved up and is going to be on this fall, which is about the first woman to play Major League Baseball. It's not true. No woman has played Major League Baseball, but it's you know, they're doing that with Major League Baseball. It's on Fox. Fox has the World Series. And I remember, you know, so I watched it and I thought, this is really tough because it's a pilot it's telling the very beginning of the story. So it's not representative of the show anyway. You could also see that they only had a very limited amount of money to get some of the scenes to show that they could, you know, fake a major league stadium. And about halfway through the trailer, they just give up and the stadium is empty for the rest of the trailer, which is really kind of sad. But I get it, because why would you spend the money, you know, especially not knowing whether you're going to be picked up or not? And I just had that thing of like, I really like this premise and I think it could be an interesting show. And I need to not judge it based on the trailer, because I'm not sure the trailer is really going to do it justice.
Right. Trailers can go for you and against you.
Yeah.
Because it can be, you can like, people think it's one thing, the way you cut it, and it doesn't end up being that way at all. That's a bait and switch. So especially if it's a more serious show, and then you show all the funny parts of it and you get in, you're like, well, this is actually kind of dark. I hate that kind of bait and switch.
Yeah.
But yeah, trailers cannot be trusted. And you know, it just kills me that this is part of the business where all this hype is generated off these things. And then we just so conveniently forget that the year before we also did this and everything failed.
They all died. It's a handful that made it through.
These are all my friends and they died. There you go.
They're little baby turtles on the beach. Most of them aren't going to make it back into the water. That's just how it is.
Wow, man. Why are you bringing me down?
Because it's upfronts. Yay! It's all the fun of the upfronts. and then the pilots. Now, what also happens is that they sometimes... I know critics often will get pilots, and the problem there is that you get the pilots and then they retool the pilots. So even if people get pilots, or they leak pilots, or they put pilots on YouTube or something like that, even then you can't really judge whether the show's going to be any good, because they retool the pilots. So, yeah. You know, just I understand, the more I talk to you about this, the more I understand your philosophy here, which is basically, I'll believe it when I see it. Let me see the show.
And then, can I see like more than one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the pitch thing, as interesting as the idea as it is for the first woman to play Major League Baseball, and I get that in the pilot, they basically have her like be called up to the majors, and that's what the pilot is. And I still think to myself, well, if you just got picked up for 13 episodes, why would you have her start in the majors in episode one? Wouldn't it be more interesting to tell like a little arc that gets her to the majors, and you see her in the minors along the way, or in college, or wherever she comes from? And I'm just a little bit baffled that's the way they chose to tell that story. But who knows? They got some time to put their show together now. So maybe they'll make changes. I don't know.
I hope so. Yeah, we'll see.
I don't know.
It's always, that's always the last thing. Let's wait and see.
Although I will say that based on the trailer, Kevin Can Wait will be exactly what you expect it to be.
Yes.
Which is, if you want the 10th season of The King of Queens, essentially.
You got it. Mm-hmm.
So he's a retired cop instead of a UPS delivery man now. And his wife is younger than the last one.
Is she really?
They're 10. I looked it up because I was really curious.
Oh, goodness.
And this one is about, I think, 5 years younger than the last one. And so now he's like 10 years younger than her. I think that's what happened.
Or she's 10 years younger than him.
She's 10 years younger than him.
Oh, I love it.
Because you got to get just the wife. The wife still needs to keep on getting hotter. That's just how the CBS sitcoms roll.
Oh, my God. Yes. Okay, America.
It's what you want.
It's what you want.
So it's what you got. I actually watched the trailer and thought, wait, is she his wife or is she like the nanny or something? But then the trailer goes on, it's like, no, she's his wife. Okay.
That which reminds me of season one of Veep, when Tony Hale's character whispers in the ear to Julia Louis Dreyfus's Selena Meyer character about certain people she's about to shake hands with, gives her little tidbits, and one guy's coming up and he whispers in her ear, wife not daughter.
Yep, I remember that.
That is LA in a nutshell as well, by the way. Wife not daughter. Yes.
I thought it was funny, Lacey Rose also listed one of the 10 newcomers generating heat was Supergirl.
Supergirl.
The CW is really, really happy to get Supergirl, it sounds like.
Well, you know what's funny about that is, you know, you and I said it, as did other people, right when it happened. Like, this should be on CW. It was really interesting to me the Mark Bedowitz from the CW said the same thing.
Yeah.
Like when he finally got it, he's like, this is where it should have always been. That's really interesting inside your parent corporation to say that. And then the stars of it all have basically said, yeah, we kind of thought we should have been over there in the first place. So everybody agrees, and then it goes there. So yeah, I hope so. You know, I hope it does well. They're shifting it, and the prices will go down, which, yeah, by the way, is a callback to my other, both of the columns I wrote about upfronts. Is like one of the things that they haven't quite figured out yet, they're making baby step strides to in the television industry, is how to make shows cheaper and more efficiently on a cost basis.
Yeah.
And you know, it's a little bit like, and you'll appreciate this because it's kind of maddening to both of us, but you know how we always talked about Game of Thrones not being 13 episodes and why not? And they have all these complicated reasons why they tell, oh, it's money and we're shooting all over the globe with four. There's always an excuse, basically. And the same thing with the networks. They say, well, we can't drive the cost down because this structure has been in place for 50 years and it's this gigantic ship that we can't turn around. What do we call that again? What do we call the ship that you couldn't turn around? Didn't we have a...
Oh, yeah.
We have like a metal ship allegory.
Wasn't it in like a... It was like in a swamp or something? I can't even remember now.
I don't know what it was. But someone will write in and tell us what exactly we made up at one point. But the networks are saying, you know, how can we drive costs down? We've got unions and we have to pay more money.
The dinosaur ship.
The dinosaur ship. Yep. There it is. So they're like, we can't turn the dinosaur ship around because everybody costs money and we have to cast in this season and that makes things more pricey. And I always look at that and I'm like, you know what? You're dying. Fix it.
Yeah.
You can do it. If you really want to do it, you can do it.
Find another way to do it. Yeah, already...
Look, yeah, and so Supergirl's the example, right? So it's being made at CBS and they shifted over to the CW and they're like, well, we can't afford this. Well, of course not. But isn't that, like, couldn't have CBS have said that? And the only reason they didn't say that is because they're successful and have money.
Yeah.
If you really want to knock it down. So you don't, just because you have money doesn't mean you should pay for it or can pay for it. So that kind of drives me crazy about the cost structure analysis in Hollywood. They need to be more cable-like, certainly, and even like more international-like. So just make it cheaper.
We do know that they are going to leave. They're going to leave Supergirl on Monday night, which gives CW their Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday DC superhero run that they're going to be doing, which is kind of interesting.
Uh-huh.
We also learned this week that there's going to be a Good Wife spinoff, and it's going to go to CBS All Access. So they've got two. They got two shows coming along with Star Trek. They've got this Good Wife spinoff to CBS All Access, and they're going to do the same thing, I believe, where they premiere it on CBS and then say, "Want to watch more? Wah, wah. You got to pay us to stream it." Bliss Moomis pops up and laughs at you. I hope you're hooked now.
Uh-huh.
So there's stuff going on. What do you make of? Les Moonves' boast about how the money's coming back to TV and leaving digital.
Well, there's some truth to that, but if you read the articles about it, and I did it, you know, Adweek has done a bunch of stuff on this sister publication, and so if you look at the stories. Especially the ones. So Jason Lynch from Adweek has done a bunch of really good stuff, and but if you look at the stories, even stories that Moonves is quoted in saying that, you know, the money's coming back, the actual ad buyers, the people who are holding the money of everybody who are you know, companies who want to advertise, in the same story, they're like, yes, but no, we could come back at the right price, and Moonves is like, we're going to have double digit increases, and they're like, no. Literally in the same story, like, no, they will not be double digit. We'll take our money elsewhere. Like three people in a row said, nope, double digits, that's not happening. But money is coming back. And, you know, I think if you are a digital, but that's to me is kind of funny. Like if you think about digital money coming back, there's actually not that much money that's there because the people who are most, the money that's, the second column addresses this. The money that's being sought after in this gigantic pool that Moonves says is now coming back to television, most people fighting for that are cable and broadcast, because the other people that in the industry that are battling for eyeballs are subscription services. They don't have ads. So it doesn't make any sense to say, I mean, that's what people, like, I've seen people say, oh man, this is going to really affect Netflix. I'm like, no, because there's no ads on Netflix. So, you know, none of that money is actually coming back. I'm a little dubious that they would actually pay the same money for half the ratings. And I would love to see a story kind of getting into that. But what Moonves is saying is, like, hey, we're kind of the only buy in town where you know what you're getting. Because if you go in digital, you know, you can have these inaccurate reporting. You could have devices driving up hits. You can have, you know, is the actual ad experience, quote unquote, something that annoys people on the digital spectrum so much that they won't even buy your product, and maybe they don't have that same reaction on television. That's fine. I think money is kind of coming back. But to me, the bigger story is, yeah, but the people who are most affecting the loss of eyeballs, they don't have ads. So, I mean, even Hulu Premium, you're not going to have ads on that. So, interesting. That's a bigger story, but it's certainly something that's going to be covered in Adweek and beyond.
We'll see. I mean, I was not to get too podcasty inside baseball, but, you know, I definitely see this happening. And there's a great debate about, like, will it be podcast ad revenue versus radio and things like that. And what are the ways to measure things? And, you know, you got way better measurement on digital than you do on something like network television. But in the end, is the measurement the issue? Or because, like, the web, there's money on the web, but the quality of web pages is, you know, it's kind of junky. It's full of ads and stuff like that. And it's a little cleaner, although the data's not there. It's a lot cleaner, and there are a lot of people on TV. So, you know, it's possible. I don't know. Ad stuff is really weird, right? Because so much of it is psychology of the ad buyers. Like, where do they feel safe? And oftentimes it trails usage, but it's an interesting idea that there might be, maybe there was a little overcompensation where people were, like, trying something new out and now are retreating a little bit back to what's comfortable. I don't know.
Yeah. But I still think, you know, not to get too wonky, because I think when you get into these numbers, it is kind of boring. There is a story there about, do you, and if it's true that digital is losing money, and by digital, my question is, who? Give me an example of who's losing money, who gained money at the expense of broadcast television or television in general, and did they? How much was it, dollar for dollar loss? And then who are they? Because they're not the people who are stealing the eyeballs from television viewers. But also, I just want to, like, what would be good about that is, if you are in the digital realm and what Moonves says is true, everybody better look at their accountability, because if that's true, if people pull their money, Madison Avenue's pulling their money out of digital because they don't trust the metrics, and they think it can be kind of janky and mm-hmm. reconfigured in weird ways to mess up the results, then you've got a problem. And you need to fix it. That's a little too boring for me to get into money-wise. But, you know, I hit in the second one, that whole thing I just talked about, you know, that's great if that's where your ad dollars are going. But that's not going to affect streaming services that don't charge.
Yeah, that's it. This is an advertising event. You know, people like Lance Moonves are really focused on ad money. And most of the stuff we think of as digital stuff is not. I mean, Hulu's got ads in them, but, like, Netflix and Amazon aren't playing that game. They're playing a different game with different money that's direct from the viewers. So it's a different, you know, I could get why they're kind of living in different worlds now.
Yeah, and like, you know, even Acorn and a lot of these other services, they're doing the same thing. They're not going to have ads in it. That's when you do a subscription service, and also, like, HBO, Stars, Showtime, obviously no ads there. So losing ad dollars to digital, great, but tell me where that money was in the first place.
Right.
So the bigger issue, I think, and I have not seen, and it could be that I just haven't found it. I want to see, like, if I'm an ad buyer. Of course, this is going to skew the story, but if I'm an ad buyer, I take my money and I put it on People versus O.J. Simpson, because everybody's talking about that when it was on, right?
Yeah.
And I don't put it on, like, Code Black or something like that, or even though that's probably doing pretty well. But I also don't throw it on Grindr, for example, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it, just because it's a network, I would rather put it on cable, and I would certainly some obscure WGN series or whatever, I put it on that because those are doing well. You know, some of those shows are surprising. You know, maybe you put it on BBC America or you put it on Sundance Channel. Oh. So that's where the competition for ad dollars really is back on cable. It's not on digital.
Right.
Okay. There's my boring thing.
Yeah. Money.
Money.
Money. But that's this week, right? This is as much as people get who are viewers and critics and, you know, get information downloaded this week. It's not what the show is about, right? The show is about money and advertisers and stuff like that. So that's why it happens.
I will throw in here a twist, not on this subject, but breaking news. Are you ready? Breaking news during this podcast.
Yes.
There's now it's all over the internet, but
Fargo season 3.
Fargo. Ewan McGregor is double role in season 3 of Fargo.
Double role.
Yes.
Interesting.
Ewan McGregor.
So he's Obi-Wan Kenobi and Darth Vader.
Well, maybe he came out of one of those UFOs in season 2. I don't know.
Maybe.
Oh, I love Fargo. Thank God.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I was thinking about the because the CBS Star Trek trailer that came out this week, which was actually one of the better trailers I saw in the sense that it had no footage. So it wasn't even trying to let you know what the show was going to be like because they have no footage. but they it did say new crews, plural. And there's been a story going around that their intent is actually to have it be more of an anthology series where they have a different cast and storyline and even setting within sort of this big Star Trek universe that exists. And I was thinking about Fargo and True Detective and thinking one of the interesting things they could do with Star Trek is if they do that, they can cast, you know, potentially more interesting actors who would sign up for a year and then they could go away again and they could have fun doing this this kind of job, especially if they grew up with Star Trek, and they can tell a story and then they can move on. And I think that's a kind of a pretty great model. And, you know, Fargo is building a brand like True Detective was trying to build before season 2 kind of swerved into the weeds. And Star Trek is a brand name. So the idea that you could just say there's a new Star Trek and it tells a story instead of saying we're going to cast a bunch of people and they're going to be in front of your faces for 7 years. You know, that's a good thing about the new world of television, I think.
Yep. A bonus.
Yeah, you can sign Ewan McGregor and say, you know, you're in one season and then you can go on with your life and we'll move on to the next people for the next season.
I like that. I want to see more anthologies and stuff like that. I like it. Turn it over.
Yeah. And well, the problem with the anthologies always used to be that it's really hard to do like episode by episode, like the Twilight Zone or something like that. But a season, especially the modern short seasons as anthologies, it's like totally, it's great because you've got this heavily serialized storylines on all TV shows anyway. And so, like we talked about in a past episode, the idea that your show is a point of view or a creator, you know, a writer or a director or some combination of those things. And even if the cast changes, even with something like American Horror Story, where the cast doesn't change as much, but still it's a new story, but it's got that same kind of perspective. And so, you know, people know to look for the name on the label, even if it's not the same story from year to year.
And it's great for actors. They get different roles. That's fun. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's a nice change to the form of television that's happened recently. Yeah. That's pretty good.
I'm all for that.
We'll see if Star Trek does it. I'm going to remain hopeful. I think that's a good idea. You got a good brand and a big sandbox there. Why stick yourself in one place when you've got, like in the case of Star Trek, the entire universe and hundreds of years of, you know, future history to play in? Just play with it.
Yeah,
we'll see. Want to do some letters?
Let's do letters.
All right, Dean of the 707 travel update. He's in Maryland, where he watched Homicide.
Oh, yeah, no-brainer, right?
And
also Wire.
And he said this week's episode of Veep was set in Maryland as well. So
it was, yes.
Uh-huh. He got lots of Maryland in
this,
Maryland.
This great episode of Veep. People should be watching Veep, by the way.
Yeah. Are just people not watching Veep?
I hope so.
I heard that, so. And I'm behind. I heard Silicon Valley was also really sharp this week.
Also very good, yeah.
HBO.
Strong.
Yeah. And Game of Thrones was really good this week, too, I thought. So.
Oh, yeah. I love it.
There's a lot going on HBO.
There's movement.
Just clear your Sundays. Yeah.
I like somebody was like, it seems so exciting this year. I'm like, yeah.
They're not sticking. They don't have books of George R. R. Martin to get through now. They just have their story to tell.
Like, you can actually, like, get the Starks a happy kind of movement. People like that.
Yeah. I did write down here the tweet from the masked scheduler who said, if you guys ran networks, you'd be rocking in a corner, sucking your thumb, crying mommy within a week. Trust me. That made me laugh. Said by somebody who probably was in that corner at one point.
Probably.
Yeah, it happens. Hey, Mike Vogon Poetry is back.
Yes.
MVP. What TV makes you happy when you watch it? I'm binging Parks and Rec season 3 and it's making me smile. From the 716 to the 206. That's a big smile.
Yeah. That's a good one. That makes me smile. Do you have to smile? Because I get such a joy when the credits roll on Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like just rubbing my hands together, like, oh, a new one. Let's go.
Yeah, comfort. I mean, I view this almost as like comfort food of like sometimes you want to pop something on and it's just, yeah, but you're right. In terms of new stuff, I mean, Game of Thrones is definitely one of the things that I anticipate. And yeah, sometimes terrible things happen, but it's like, you know, I always want to see what's next. And that does make me happy. That's one of the only shows I watch day and date every time.
Absolutely. Totally feel the same way. And it's like, you know, same thing for me when Fargo was on. I just couldn't wait to see it.
Right.
There's a few. I still get that same smile, and probably because I'm laughing when I watch most of the comedies that I like, whether it's Veep or Silicon Valley or Brooklyn Nine-Nine. You know, you watch those or Fresh Off the Boat or Blackish. You watch those, and it's fun. You know, it's kind of corny, but sometimes I think, oh, what a great world we live in. Where there's a whole part of the world where people just do things to make other people laugh, you know. Mm-hmm. They don't have that. They don't have that luxury in a third world country. Yeah. Nobody's actually making stuff for the rest of the country to laugh at. So we're doing pretty well in this country.
Yeah,
life's pretty good.
That's true. They're making things for our amusement.
Mm-hmm.
Professionals.
And that's an industry, and that's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Can you imagine sitting like the cavemen sitting around, not knowing that was a thing at one point?
They just made shadow puppets in the cave walls from
the killed
prior.
Dinosaurs. It was a hard life.
Yeah, I don't think that's how it works. They couldn't turn the dinosaur ship. Michael from the 206, but with a 303 area code on my phone. That's very confusing. Says the move of Supergirl from CBS to the WB had me thinking it's not that, it's the CW. But he said the WB. That's a fact. I fact checked your letter. Ha, look at me fact checking things on the fly. He says, why doesn't ABC move something like the Marvel shows like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which it clearly doesn't want and doesn't fit its demographic, to something else like Freeform? They're clearly desperate for original programming on that channel, and maybe it would be a better fit. The biggest challenge, I think, would be budgetary. The shows on Freeform seem to be super cheap. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely be a budgetary issue there. You couldn't, and Marvel would never go for that. There's not enough high profile on Freeform, and basically every time Freeform's mentioned, it's in a form of a joke about the title. So no, it couldn't go there. I talked about this before. I think what Marvel really wants is to get out of the business with ABC and move to something else. I mean, you could still have a couple of shows on there. I mean, why wouldn't you? You kind of, you know, more is better, and sometimes, but they're doing great with Netflix. They're not doing so hot with our boys at ABC.
Yeah, there was actually a post that I saw that they're working on. There's a rumor that Marvel and Netflix are working on a new wave of character shows. The rumors are Blade. You may remember the Wesley Snipes movies. He's a he's a half vampire, kind of vampire hunter guy. Ghost Rider. You may remember. There's a lot of rehab here. We may remember the Nicolas Cage movies. He's kind of like a ghost. Flaming skeleton dude on a motorcycle, and Moon Knight, who is sort of like if Batman wore white after Labor Day. And they're all, all rumored to be in development for Netflix. So that's, you know, that's Marvel. That would be like 8 different shows on Netflix from Marvel. So it sounds like, and I say, why not? Because like we said last week, it's a good partnership. It's working really well for everybody. Why not keep going with it?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, you know, Netflix is like, yes, more Seriously. Content. Put it on the shelves.
Yeah. We got $1 billion to spend.
Forever. Yeah. Now we have it forever.
Yeah. So here's one from Jonathan in the +44, the UK.
Nice.
He sent us his entire, he sent us almost his entire address, but I'm just going to say the +44. That's all you need to know. He says, here are 3 TV shows I've been watching recently. In times of too much TV, you can add them to your list, as I think they're worth catching if they appear on American TV. So it's a little intel from across the pond.
Okay.
About some things to watch for. He suggests The Five, which is on Sky TV.
Okay.
Marcella, which is on ITV. I think that's
okay. Yes, sounds made up. Remember this Marcella pitch? I think he's given me this online before.
And
okay.
Jack Irish : Blind Faith, which is shown on Fox UK. It's an Australian drama, and Jonathan reports no spiders so far. Also, no drop bears, hopefully.
Jack Irish, I do know about because you can get that on Acorn. Streaming on Acorn, and that has what's the actor? Oh my God, I'm blanking it.
Guy Pearce.
That's not anybody. Guy Pearce. Thank you, Internet.
Thanks, Internet.
Thanks, Internet, for saving me. Where were you, Internet, when I did my wrong French pronunciation? Damn it, Internet. Bad Internet. Yeah, Guy Pearce.
Yeah,
he is the detective. I was just about to say that movie where everything goes backwards.
Oh yeah, Memento.
Yes. See, you would have got it.
Yeah.
In one step.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he says, Jonathan says, sometimes we have to wait for U.S. shows. The American season 4 starts this week, and you guys have to wait for UK TV shows. It's true. Unlike the worldwide simultaneous release, he says, of the TV Talk Machine podcast. Thank you, Jonathan, for promoting our
podcast. I would
podcast.
Add to that a lot of people are also telling, and this is one I've not done, but a lot of people are saying, watch River. That you can see it on Netflix.
Huh.
So, in fact, I just recently got cornered by a couple people who were like, oh, my God, that was my favorite show of all of last year, River. So I was like, okay, check it out.
Interesting. And that's, is that Swedish?
I think it's British, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
Because clearly I have not watched it.
Yeah. Oh, it was a BBC One. BBC One.
There you go.
All right. River. We'll put that on the list, too. All right, we got a couple more here. Here's one from Anne in the 618.
Hi, Anne.
This is a good one. I saw some promotional materials for NBC's Emerald City, speaking of pilots that they're picking up and trying to promote. This introduced Dorothy Gale as a 20-year-old accompanied by her canine police dog, Toto. Please tell me this is not going to be a police procedural with Dorothy and Toto, not a cop, and cop dog solving crimes in the land of Oz. Signed a concerned citizen. Thank you, Anne.
I think they should all be signed that way. A concerned citizen.
Yeah.
I don't even know. So I like I said, people think I'm kidding when I, and you know I'm not, no. When I say I'll believe it when I see it.
You're dead serious.
I do not pay attention. And so if Emerald City actually got picked up, I had never heard of it. And maybe it's a mid-season show, but I hope that's one that got passed over.
I don't know. The description that I read was 20-year-old Dorothy Gale and her canine police dog are transported to another world far removed from our own. And it does sound a little bit like a cop and cop dog and not a cop person.
Cop dog.
But it was a 10-episode order straight to series from NBC. So that's it. Tarsem Singh, a film director who has directed some very interesting and also some very not interesting movies, is the pilot director, I guess. And it is 20-year-old Dorothy Gale and her canine police dog swept into a world far removed from our own, a mystical land of competing realms, lethal warriors, dark magic, and a bloody battle for supremacy. And Vincent D'Onofrio is the wizard.
The wizard.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't hear it. This must be mid-season because it certainly didn't get any buzz during the upfronts.
Yeah, dog, not a dog. It's mid-season, yeah. Not on the fall schedule, but they did a 10-episode order.
Mid-season. Okay, yeah. There's usually no buzz
Get ready.
For those.
Dog, but not a dog.
Dog, not a cop. We'll keep, dog.
We'll keep an eye on that. Thank you, Anne, for pointing out a whole new level, really, in Cop, Not a Cop, right there. Amazing.
Wow. Oh, wait,
speaking of Cop, Not a Cop, I should mention, I'm Columboing myself here before I get to the
you
last
just
letter.
Just did, yeah.
I did it. That Cop, Not a Cop was a joke that I referenced and a letter writer referenced. It was a joke on my favorite podcast, which is The Flophouse. And I will only mention that it was announced today, actually, that Elliot Kalin, who used to be the head writer at The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, and when Jon Stewart left, Elliot also left The Daily Show, wanted to do... He'd been there, I think, like 10 more years, basically his entire professional career. It was announced today that Elliot Kalin of The Flophouse is the head writer on the new Mystery Science Theater 3000, which they had the Kickstarter for, but I think it's going to be on somewhere, either a channel or a streaming somewhere. But I think that's great because he's a very smart, funny guy who knows about bad movies and makes me much, much more excited, even more excited about them bringing back MST3K, which I always loved.
Yes.
So I'll just throw that out there. Wherever it goes, we don't know where it's going to go yet. Last I saw, they were talking to people about it. It wasn't just going to be like Kickstarter paid us to do episodes and we'll put them on Kickstarter and we'll be done. I think they're actually selling it somewhere, but I don't know where.
Good.
But anyway, that was the little news from the people who brought you Cop Not a Cop, the Flophouse podcast. Our last letter is from Twitter. It's from the curated TV account on Twitter, and it's simply this: I totally agree that empty coffee cups are not a thing. Also not a thing, empty suitcases. Oh man. Ooh. You're not kidding.
Yeah.
A lot of people carry around suitcases. Now if they are Supergirl, I'll buy it, right? Because she's super strong and could lift a suitcase, no problem. But if they're not a superpowered person and they're carrying around a suitcase like it's got nothing in it, that's because it's got nothing in it. And it's really annoying. So, again, come on, prop people. Make it heavy. Make those actors work a little bit.
Yeah.
That's it.
Funny.
That's all I got.
Suitcases that suitcases. Are not filled. We suitcases. Filled it, though.
They should put the coffee cups in there. That would...
Oh,
weighed
look at the idea. I saw what you did there.
Yeah, I was trying.
Look at us. We filled both your coffee cup.
We did.
And your mind. And your proverbial suitcase.
Yes. With talk. Knowledge. With TV talk.
From, I went with knowledge. You went with talk.
From a machine. Oh, yeah.
Hot air.
Well, it was all talk, but there was lots of knowledge. You were dropping a lot of knowledge. And you didn't even say sadness more than once or twice.
No, I think when people read that first Upfronts column, they will sense all the sadness they do.
They're going to feel the sadness.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt about it. All right, well, let me give everybody the numbers. You can post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/TV Talk Machine. You can email us, podcast@TVTalkMachine.com. And, of course, tweet at us. We love those, @TVTM. And you can also tweet at us personally if you like. I am Jay Snell on Twitter, and Tim is Bastard Machine on Twitter. And you can find all of the show notes and back episodes and all that at theincomparable.com/TVTM. That's it. We did it. Woo! Yes!
Another one!
Another one in the books. Thanks to everybody out there for listening. Tim, see you next week.
Okay.